What does it mean to live wisely in a world filled with uncertainty? Plain and simple, that is our overarching theme today. What does it mean to live wisely in a world filled with uncertainty? Trust God in every season. Last week and this week, we have turned once again to the book of Ecclesiastes, a book that you probably can tell I really like. I find great wisdom myself in it. One of our three wisdom books, and you get to see from a very big picture down, you've got the Proverbs, which explanation I saw, it was a video, explained it as, think of Proverbs as the young teacher. Do A, you will get B. Don't do X, you will get Y. You save $100 a month for Christmas gifts. By December, you will have $1,200 to spend on Christmas gifts. You know, that's a given. Okay? And my favorite one, don't do crack, you won't become a crack addict. Okay? Pretty straightforward. And often see things that way. On the other end, you got Job, the guy who lived the Proverbs life, who went through the great trial. In the end, he gets his health is restored, his wealth is restored, he gets a new family. But in the end, it really goes, but wait, I've lived the good life, and yet this, I mean, I've done right, and yet this has happened. It's kind of an older person. And then Ecclesiastes was presented as someone in the Middle Ages, whether early Middle Age or mid-Middle Age or late Middle Age, who has seen things in life, not questioning Proverbs per se, but just kind of looking at that in light of what has been seen up to that point. And different images that come to mind. Think of someone just... well, again, as either analyzing life or been through a hard season. One image is that of the guy in the 40s. Life isn't kind of working out like I thought. Now, a conversation with my sister some years ago, and one of her friends was actually not making some good decisions, but she just said, well, Jones, the 30s are to a woman what the 40s are to a man. Just ponder that, ladies. I mean, men, they think about that. But in terms of analyzing life, so that kind of may be someone on the young side. It could be somebody in the 40s assessing life. Someone at 50 in halftime. Somebody at 60 saying, okay, and think of one woman who talked about, you know, 40s and 50s, I was going strong. And then I hit 60. Not over yet. But I'm at a different place and kind of had to start mentally, kind of start her game plan all over again. Or the person at 70 saying, okay, retirement, but folks keep going and going. We're like the bunnies these days, you know, in terms of going. That bunny with the battery. There's still so much to be lived in front. Some see this book as the man who has had it all and then made a couple of bad decisions and lost so much. And looking back over life, I'm not sure it's quite that negative. I see it as the person who has lived the Proverbs life, but just some things have happened in trying to make sense of it. And so it makes sense that in this section, Chapter 7, we have a series of Proverbs. And they make, again, it makes sense. This person is rooted in the Proverbs world. Now, to say where am I going, I want to give kind of a bigger picture of this chapter section. Go back to the first set, what you see in your bulletin, and then reflect on the gospel lesson. Say, that's the map. So this section here starts well. A good name is better than a good ointment in places it's done. Keep your name good. Okay, that makes sense. That's classic. Hearing that, I thought about a country song from some years ago about entitled my last name. And the singer says, I may never make it famous, but I'll never bring it shame. It's my last name. Daddy always told me, far back as I recall, son, you're part of something. You represent us all. So keep it how you got it, as solid as it came. It's your last name. So that, again, that makes sense. Got it. Good. Protect your name. But then you've got this very odd piece that follows. That's saying the day of death is better than the day of a birth. Okay? It's better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. It's like skip that birthday party, but be sure to go to that funeral, even of a person you barely knew. Seems a little odd to be saying something like that. It's a bit of a zinger. And we're going to come back. What follows in verse 5 through 12, which is not in our lesson, speaks about the discipline of wisdom, to listen to wise counsel and not to engage in folly. An application could be to learn to accept constructive criticism. And then our last verses 13 and 14, to trust God's sovereignty. And I'll get back to that. So we have the value of reflection in our first section, the discipline of wisdom, and then trust God's sovereignty. So how do we make sense of these odd proverbs? Proverbs that reflect a somewhat jaded view of life. A person who says, I believe, yet I've also seen certain things in life. I've seen all the pretty pictures. And now I know what often lies behind them. Sometimes the hard reality is more reassuring than the softer image. And that is one of the oddities of life. I think of the man who said to Jesus, I believe, help thou my unbelief. And this person is saying, I believe, yet, I've also seen certain things in life. These first few verses invite us to reflect. And the closing leads to its conclusion. So read both those verses here. Consider the work of God. Who can make straight what God has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful, and in the day of adversity, consider God has made the one as well as the other, so that mortals may not find out anything that will come after them. These verses, 13 and 14, encourage gratitude during times of prosperity and faith during challenges. Reminds me of the person who said, the older I get, the less I understand the Lord, and yet the more I trust the Lord. The first verses invite reflection, pondering, even journaling. If not a literal journal, keeping one in your head, it invites reflection. There is a Stoic saying, memento mori, remember you will die, and living life in light of that. Some images even of somebody keeping a skull on their desk. I don't think I want one on mine, but the idea was living in light of that. With that in mind, what priorities do I choose? And from these verses come one of those odd truths that sorrow and sobering times can lead to wisdom and understanding and even growth. Many of us have enjoyed the works of C.S. Lewis. You may know that when he was 56, had been a confirmed bachelor for all those years, he married Joy Davidson. in what was essentially a green card, we would call it here a green card marriage. She needed to stay in England. She was an American. So you marry an Englishman, boom, you get to stay. Well, they were friends, but it really was, in a sense, a green card marriage of convenience. And yet, he ended up falling hopelessly, head over heels, slapdog in love. Very great four-year marriage. And then she died of cancer. And this is a book that comes from it. Afterwards, he just found an empty journal and basically said, I could, knowing me, I could write forever. So I'm just going to write as long as I got pages in this book. And through this, it's called The Grief Observed. It is highly recommend. It was a time in my life when it was recommended to me, and that's when I got it and read it. But again, it talks about the highs and the lows. And at one point, it's like, yeah, I'm finding hope. I'm finding hope. I'm crashing. Very honestly, now I'm crashing. Then it's going to end on a more positive note. But very, it's up, it's down. It's a roller coaster. It's like you're at Six Flags, okay? Up and down at places. But what he was able to learn from that. A sense that through the process, Lewis came to a more profound understanding of God's presence in suffering. He concluded that grief, though painful, could serve as a tool of spiritual refinement. Again, doing some research with some individuals, Priscilla Shire, the Bible teacher, some of you are familiar with her, talked about, faced a period of sorrow and uncertainty when her mother, Lois Evans, passed away after a prolonged battle with cancer. Shire reflected on God's promises during this difficult time. Verses like Philippians 4, 6, 7, which reminds believers not to be anxious, but to present their requests to God in prayer. And this sorrow deepened her understanding of peace that comes from trusting God, even in the midst of unanswered questions. She often speaks of the importance of prayer and spiritual warfare, emphasizing how trials can strengthen faith and equip believers to walk confidently in their purpose. Charles Spurgeon, again, an example I came across, found strength in weakness. There was a tragic event where someone had, don't yell fire in a crowded theater. Well, someone yelled fire in a crowded church. And people were actually killed in the front end of that stampede to get other. Many were injured. Spurgeon, deeply shaken, questioned his calling, struggled with guilt. Do I just need to give up the ministry? But then through prayer and reflection and looking at scriptures such as 2 Corinthians 12:9, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness, Spurgeon gained a deeper understanding of God's sovereignty and grace. This experience shaped his preaching, making it more compassionate and focused on the hope found in Christ. I think of the person, the builder, who has seen the market crash, and where do I restart? Maybe I need to build my life differently. I think of the person who has messed up and now is taking a searching and fearless moral inventory. I think of the person who has had a failure, has reflected, and has become a more compassionate leader. Some of us read the Scarlet Letter in high school. It was assigned reading. And part of the book, I mean, yes, there's the shame that she had to face, but Hester Prynne, who did not know, was in an inappropriate relationship and had a child to prove it. And so she was forced to wear a scarlet letter. She would never reveal the name of the father. And so she was openly, we know who she is, but from this she learned. And it was actually the pastor in town who even said, when she's on trial, hey, just call out the person's name, let that person join you. And she wouldn't. He would not. And he was actually driven by his guilt to his death. But she openly had to deal with it. She later leaves and comes back. And even as an old woman, she is wearing, and at the conclusion of the book said at that point, nobody was going to force her to wear it. She chose to wear it. And she was the one to whom everybody would go in the community when they had their problems. She was the one. She had, and not justifying what she did, but she had faced it and learned from it. It is an odd irony. These proverbs are a bit unsettling. But then Jesus in the Beatitudes says, blessed are those who mourn. Blessed are those who are humble. Blessed are those who are meek of heart. Jesus says in John 16:33, our first lesson, in this world, and that really should say, in this world, all y'all will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world. Our concluding verse from Ecclesiastes acknowledges prosperity and challenges are both under God's hand. So from these proverbs, from these words, we are reminded again of the importance of wisdom and humility and trust. So I conclude where I began. What does it mean to live wisely in a world filled with uncertainty? Trusting God in every season. Jesus assures us, take courage, for I have conquered the world. Thanks be to God. Amen. Now I invite you to stand and let us affirm our faith using the words of the Apostles' Creed.